Our lesson is based on the life and examples of David and Jonathan. And what we're primarily looking at for this balance of this hour are their examples of faith based on two of the major events, one in each, the life of Jonathan first and then David following, based, as we read in the scripture from Hebrews 11, based in conflicts that are drawn from first Samuel, the 14th chapter. And this is the, battle of, there are two considerations, brethren. First, for Jonathan, the battle of Michmash, recorded in 1 Samuel, the 14th chapter, and then later the story of David and Goliath, which is the battle in the Valley of Elah in 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter. Now, I love history, but to me, history needs context of geography. So, brethren, if you look at this particular map we have in front of you, here is where Michmash is, and here is although it's called Jebus here, here's Jerusalem. So a frame of reference of distance from here to here, it's something on the order of, I think it's 20 some odd miles or something like that. This is the story of the Battle of Michmash, which is one of the most famous conflicts in ancient Israel's history that they revere even to this day. And then later we're going to get into the battle in the Valley of Elah, which takes place over here, which was some 20 plus years after the Battle of Michmash. So let us scroll down and just give you a bit of a sort of a 3D perspective. This is the Valley of Elah is in here. It's sort of directly west of Bethlehem over here. This is our second part. First part is going to be the Battle of Michmash, which is in this area here. Now, this just kind of gives you a bit of a lay of the land, brethren. And now we want to give you a bit of a lay of the background history of the story of the Battle of Michmash. And this is, as we said, recorded in 1 Samuel, the 14th chapter. The battle is between King Saul and his small army against a tremendously large army of Philistines. In the 13th chapter of the book of Samuel is recorded a wonderful victory by Saul's son Jonathan over the Philistines, which caused a great consternation amongst the Philistines, recorded in the 13th chapter. And then the Philistine army comes to the area of Michmash to congregate and prepare themselves for battle. That's kind of the background and setting. But we have to understand that, yes, as we're reading here, the Philistines had oppressed the children of Israel for many years, and children of Israel have a king permitted by the Lord, and they are gathering in Michmash and prepared for battle against Israel, and it really looks dire. In the latter part of the 13th chapter of 1 Samuel, we're told that the oppression of the Philistines over the Israelites was so significant that the Israelites had, in all of their people, they had no more than two swords and two spears, because the Philistines would not permit them to make instruments of war. So this threat of this conflict between the Philistines and the Israelites is really not only in 1 Samuel, the 13th chapter, it says the number of the Philistines is as the sea of the, sand of the seashore. And the number recorded in 1 Samuel, the 14th chapter, of the army of Israel under Saul, it's only given as 600. So this is really not a fair fight by any means. And in fact, it was such a tenuous situation that it says many of the soldiers hid themselves because they were totally overwhelmed. The situation looked dire. It's worth noting, just as we advance here, brethren, you think of the kings of Israel, and it's interesting to note that Saul did not rule from a palace, but a simple stone fortress on the side of a hill in Gibeah, in northern part of just north of Judea, which was in the area of Benjamin. And these are the excavations of that rather simple stone fortress from which Saul ruled, and Gibeah was just 7 miles southwest of Michmash. Now, here's the lay of the land for the battle conflict. And you'll have to bear with me, because this map is, if you can see here, is pointing north, not here as in north. So the sort of turn cattywampus here. Here is the area of Michmash up on a hill where the Philistine army had congregated. And towards the south, this indicates Geba, Gibeah would be over here, and this is where Saul and his army were congregated at. Now, keep this in mind here, because this will come up a little later, brethren, and is of interest as this story unfolds. Boaz and Senna are in this area, and if you're not familiar with that, they play a most important role in this story. So the background to this whole conflict is, the Israelites are overwhelmed, overmanned. They're terrified. They don't know what to do. And so what happens? This situation prompts Saul's son, Jonathan, our hero of faith in this incident, to say to the young man that was his armor bearer, "Come, let us go over unto the garrison of these who? Uncircumcised, the heathen, those who are not in relationship with God. It may be," he's not being presumptuous, "it may be that the Lord will work with us, for," and you know, brethren, I think these are some of my favorite words in the entire Old Testament, Jonathan's words, "there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few." Perhaps the Lord can use just you and I to deliver in this impossible situation. And as commendable as we need to be towards Jonathan and his amazing faith displayed in these words and followed by his actions, his armor bearer says to Jonathan, "Do all that is in thine heart. Turn thee, behold, I am with thee according to thy heart." He didn't say, "No, I don't think so." He said, "I am with you." And so here is the lay of the land. If I can get my little laser pointer here, my cursor's flipping between two screens here. There we go. So here is Gibeah, and this is the area where Saul and his army, it does say down here that his army is located here, 600 men. Jonathan and his armor bearer say, "Let's go up against these." So the Philistines, as we read, had four guards looking out for the army of Israel. And we're told that Jonathan and his armor bearer went through the passes and came up upon that area of Boaz and I've forgotten the name of the second place here, brethren, so excuse me, Senna. And that is this area right in here. So we know, because of the mentioning of going through the passes, of exactly that they came sort of the roundabout back area. They didn't come what would be the normal, whoops, I jumped ahead here, excuse me. They did not come through the normal, the shortest route of the passes. They came this particular direction. So, and this is kind of a following up a few pictures of this. This is the area that they walk through, and over here are some of the Boaz area, and here is that great rock area that they would have come through this pass and up this direction, and the guards of the Philistines would have been in this particular area. The account goes on that Jonathan the armor bearer came upon the foreguard, and they taunted them, the foreguard, you know, who are these two just to come against us? And then Jonathan said, essentially, let's lay out the fleece, and verses 1 Samuel 14, 9 and 10, and determine whether it indeed is the Lord's will for us to go forward and combat these uncircumcised. Jonathan said, behold, we will cross over to the men, we will show ourselves to them, and if they, and here's the laying out of the fleece, if they say to us, excuse me, wait until we come unto you, then we will stand still in our place, and we will not go up to them. But if they say to us, come up to us, then we will go, for this is the sign that the Lord has given them into our hands, and this is the sign that shall be for us. And so, of course, these men, and we're told this foreguard in the 14th chapter was approximately 20 men or so, gave them that answer, come up to us and we will battle you there. And then the story continues that Jonathan and his armor bearer, the two of them, overwhelmed 20 men. So definitely the Lord was with them and blessed them in even that conquest. But that's just the beginning of the story, because from there it says that they overwhelmed the 24 guard. And at the same time as this had happened, there was a great trembling of the host of the encampment of the Philistines in Michmash, and amongst all the people, the garrison, and the spoilers. Yes, they had spoiled the Israelites when they had taken over Michmash, and they trembled. And what happened? The Lord intervened. There was such a great earthquake, a trembling and a panic. And the watchmen of Saul in Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude of the Philistines melted away, and they went on beating down. They hammered, they struck one another, they started fighting amongst themselves. And so Jonathan and his armor bearer's faith to combat and conquer the 20 started a whole series of events where the Lord intervened to reward their faith and strike down with a great earthquake and a great panic in the camp of the Philistines, such as they ran hither and yon, here and there, and ended up fighting against one another. And Saul and his people saw what was happening, and they fled to the battle to be part of this battle. So this is the area which Saul's army came and tried to attack, while the Philistines began to flee in this direction. Now, Saul, in this situation, we're told in the 14th chapter, verses 2 and 3, was camped under a pomegranate tree, was staying in the shade with one of the priestly family. And upon hearing and seeing this conflict within the Philistine camp and the great earthquake that had caused such a consternation and conflict amongst themselves, told the priest to remove your hand. Now, this is an interesting statement, brethren. We believe that this means he was telling the priest, take your hand out from consulting with the Urim and Thummim, which was in the pocket of the breastplate. It's not time to ask what to do. It's time to get up and do because of what we see is going on. And so from the faith of Jonathan and his armor bearer, you know, we don't have to belittle the terrified soldiers and even Saul camped out under a pomegranate tree, but rather think more that the actions of the few inspired the others to pursue and be part of this conflict on behalf of the Lord's people. You know, it is a marvelous story of faith, of actions of a few that inspired many others to action. But this 14th chapter, the remainder of this chapter, goes on to tell us an account that is so remarkable in and of itself, and is a demonstration of Saul's terrible and foolish behavior. He said that his men, in pursuing the Philistines, were not to pause to refresh themselves or take any sustenance. They were to be totally engaged in the battle and cut down all the Philistines that they could find. And he made them take an oath that if anyone paused to refresh themselves, that they would be cut off in death. And I think you know what happened here, brethren. You know the story. Jonathan did not know that Saul had enjoined his army to take this oath, and not knowing this, exhausted from the exertions of their battle, he paused to take some honey to refresh himself. But in verse 45, and for this, Saul, when he heard that Jonathan had refreshed himself by taking some nourishment, said, well, he must die because he's violated the oath that I made all my men take. But in verse 45, the men of the army would not permit Saul to touch one hair of Jonathan's head because they had so much respect for him for his demonstration of faith. The Battle of Michmash is remarkable on many levels and many accounts. It is revered in the history of Israel for God's deliverance of Israel in the face of impossible, insurmountable odds. Jonathan's display of faith is remarkable. And I do ask you, brethren, is there a more profound statement of faith that there is no restraint with God to save by many or few, and how we can take that to ourselves, and then whether our resources are great or small, it is a matter of faith in God's ability that counts. And not only to say this, but to act upon this statement of faith. It's no wonder that Jonathan and David were one in heart and mind, because they say they shared the same amazing faith and in their love of God. Now, the next story, brethren, is an example of faith of David. And this is the story of the Battle of the Valley of Elah, which took place approximately, you can find varying accounts that it may have been 20, it might have been 26 years. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of 22 to 24 years after the Battle of Michmash. And the background is very similar to the Battle of Michmash. Valley of Elah here, and the second picture, it's over here, just directly west of Bethlehem. the background of the story is very similar to the previous account. Israel, again, is subjugated to the Philistines and threatened by a large Philistine army. We find the story in 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter. The background is that Israel and the Philistines are camped on hillsides on the opposite sides of the valley, prepared for battle. And at this time, the Philistine giant Goliath taunts the terrified Israelites to do battle. So again, we have a large Philistine army and a rather terrified Israel army, again, under the leadership of Saul. He's still the king at the time. And at this time, David is, he is too young to be part of the army. In Numbers, the first chapter, I think it's the very first couple of verses, brethren, it tells us that to be part of the army, you had to be at least 20 years old. So we know that David was not 20 years old at this point because he can't be part of the army. And he's too young to be in the army, but he hears Goliath's taunt and is righteously indignant, and he meets Goliath's challenge, and the rest, as they say, is history. And is, I wonder if there's a person in the world that doesn't know Christian, Jew, or whatever religion, who doesn't know this story. Here is a satellite view currently, or within the last few years, I would imagine, of the Valley of Elah, running east to west direction. It is still, excuse me, it is still an agricultural area, undeveloped, except for over here. There, on the east side of the valley, there are a collection of satellite dishes. There are some amazing archaeological sites here. Zika over here is one of the best archaeological sites in Israel, and sites here. So this is the area of the conflict, and we'll give you a slightly different view, not a satellite view, but a view that is taken, I think, somewhat, if I get my angles correct, somewhat from a north, looking to a north eastern direction. And so we're told in 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter, that the Philistines are camped between Saka and Azekah. And even though that is all the way over here, it is understood that the Philistine camp was really in this direction, on the southern slopes. And the Israelite camp was based here on the northern slopes of this valley running east-west. And if you look very carefully, and if I can get my cursor to be somewhat accurate, if you sort of see this bit of vegetation running through here, I would wager that you could guess what that is. That's the brook where David took the stone from. And it is a... We'll see in a moment. It really was a wadi, a brook that ran primarily in winter and late winter, early springtime. So the background to this is, preceding our account in 1 Samuel 17th chapter, David is the, young shepherd boy who was anointed by Samuel. And as the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, David was a harpist, was summoned to soothe Saul by playing his music. And Saul ruled from Gibeah, north of Jerusalem. So at the time of this conflict, Saul had moved with his army to west of Bethlehem, to the Valley of Elah, and that's where he and his army are encamped at. And at this time, David returns to Bethlehem from Gibeah to tend to his father's sheep. So while David is in Bethlehem, he is sent by his father to bring supplies to his brothers in the army. And while he is there, David hears the taunts and sees the fear amongst the soldiers of Israel. hears the taunts of Goliath, and he is absolutely outraged. And he goes to Saul, and he asks Saul to permit him to fight Goliath. And he recounts to Saul the stories of the Lord being with him in the slaying of the lion and the bear. And so it is in 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter, is the story of David confronting and killing Goliath with a stone from the brook, and then the sword of Goliath. And on the side here, brethren, this is that brook, which is, as we mentioned, a wadi, so it's dry most of the year. And illustrations of David running to, as Brother Jim said earlier, Goliath and striking him with the stone, and then taking his own Goliath's own sword and taking his head off. In our next slide, read David's bold words after having been laughed at and mocked by Goliath. Who is this little person to come to me? I am going to feed your remains to the wild beast, Goliath said. But David responded and said to him, you may come against me, a giant of a man, 9'6" or whatever he may have been, with a sword, a spear, and a javelin. But I come to you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. Interesting, he didn't have a sword, but he knew what he was going to do. He had a plan. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and to the wild animals, throwing back to Goliath the very words that Goliath had used to him. And the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. And those gathered here will know that it is not by the sword or spear that the Lord saves. And note his words, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. Now there is a statement of faith and belief that it's not me against you. I represent the Lord, and this is the Lord's battle. So again, brethren, this is the lay of the land. The brook being here, so this is the general area we believe that from the two armies in this direction would, where the David and Goliath conflict took place, and what happened as a result of this, why with Goliath being slain, the Philistines saw this and they fled. And they were pursued by Saul's army as they – whoops, I keep hitting the wrong button. I am not a PowerPoint person. Excuse me, brother. So they fled from here, and it says they fled all the way to Gath. They went in a westerly direction, and then around Azekah, and Gath is a few miles away from this location. So they fled back to their home territory. Now – at the conclusion of the battle, very interesting, brethren, David took the head of Goliath to show to Saul. Now, that's perhaps somewhat understandable. But then what took place after that is interesting and could be perhaps open to interpretation as to why David did what he did. Excuse me. David took Goliath's head to Jerusalem. Now, why on earth would he do that? And in fact, the name Jerusalem, brethren, here is a name applied to this locale years later, because Jerusalem at this time was known as Jebus. It was a small Jebusite city. The Jebusites were Canaanites that were never driven out of the land when the Israelites first entered the land and were told to get rid of all of, expel all the Canaanites. Well, they never got rid of the Jebusites. And this lasted for quite some long time because the Jebusites built up Jebus as a fortified city. And all through the period of Judges, they were tried to be pushed out, and they resisted and were able to sustain themselves and remain there. Perhaps some have suggested that David took it to Jebus, to what the future Jerusalem, to show the idolatrous people, these Canaanites, what would happen to those that oppose the Lord and his people. And whatever the reason, 19 years after the battle in the Valley of Elah, David came again to Jebus to make it the city of David, Jerusalem. After the death of Saul, David was anointed the king of Judah and lived in Hebron for a period, we're told, of 7 years and 6 months. And 19 years approximately after the Battle of Elah, the elders of Israel came to David to anoint him as the king over all 12 tribes, not just the 2 tribes that he had initially been ruling over. Now, interesting, in this 2 Samuel, the 5th chapter, the very first thing that David does upon being anointed the ruler of all the 12 tribes is that David takes his men to Jebus, Jerusalem, to remove the Jebusites from the stronghold and make their city the center of his rule over all Israel. Now, I can put this in the notes later, brethren, but this particular video, I am not going to play this. I'll comment on it, make a few comments on it, but it's worth watching. I had no idea until I was sort of working on this lesson some time ago. How did David actually conquer Jerusalem? I'm somewhat astonished in the story in 2 Samuel, the 5th chapter, how brief and the account is, and then doubled up upon that is how difficult the account is to figure out, because the King James translation particularly is so bad, you cannot understand what it's saying. Other translations, the New American Standard and others, clarify it and give a lot of meaning to it. But I recommend you watch this video, brethren, if you're so inclined. As I say, I'll put it in the chat or notes a little later, that particular website. And you can find it in Google by just David Conquers Jerusalem, and go to videos. This will come up. It's about 4.5 minutes approximately, and kind of gives you it's mostly scripturally accurate combined with Jewish historical accounts that may or may not be entirely correct. But here is a little background on what the video says and what the account in 2 Samuel, the 5th chapter, says. So Jebus was basically what we know today as the city of David, which was the southern portion of ancient Jerusalem, because Mount Moriah, the temple area, was not yet part of the fortified area, wasn't part of Jerusalem at this point. That came later as David purchased the land from a Jebusite, interestingly enough. And this account in 2 Samuel, the 5th chapter, indicates to us that they came upon, David and his army came upon Jebus and were taunted greatly by the Jebusites, who put they're lame and they're blind up on the bulwarks and the walls and taunted them. Even the, you can't break into our impenetrable fortress. Even the blind and the lame can stop you. Well, not so much. But what they had done was, the Jebusites is around the Gihon Spring, which is the only water source of ancient Jerusalem, they had built a citadel or a fortified wall around it so that they could extract water from it. And I think we'll go, so if you, the wall of Jerusalem extends sort of in this direction, and then they built this fortified area around the spring. And so what they had done and what the, was discovered, I think it was in, let me think now, 1867 by, a gentleman named Charles Warren, doing some excavation, that he had found that the Gihon Spring had a natural wearing area, and that the Jebusites had built a tunnel area that they could stand here and drop their buckets down and pull water up from. Well, somehow or other, people talk, David knew that there was a passageway in there, and if they breached the wall to the Gihon Spring, that they could come in here. And so he says to his men, okay, who amongst you can breach this wall and get up into that passageway? And the video suggests open the gates and let our army in. And then one man steps forward. David says, if you accomplish this, you will be the leader of my army. Guess who that was? That was Joab. So largely this video is correct, but we really, some of it is Jewish history. We really don't know quite how, once Joab breached the area, how he opened the gates, or if indeed that's what took place. But the video says that David chose Jerusalem as a centrally located fortified city from which he could rule over all Israel, and that seems entirely plausible. We don't have any directives in the scriptures that the Lord told David, go here, make this the capital, etc. However, we do believe that the Lord may well have overruled David's actions, because the Lord had told the children of Israel while they were still in the wilderness before they came into the promised land, recorded in Deuteronomy 12, 5 to 7, that he, God, would choose a place in the promised land to be a meeting place between him and the people. And some approximately 500 years later, God overruled the actions of David so that Jerusalem would be then and forevermore that meeting place between God and man. Excuse me. After securing Jerusalem, the story is interesting. The old enemies, the Philistines, hear that of David's ascension to the throne and his conquest of Jebus and Jerusalem, now known as the City of David, and remembered their humiliation from years before, come forward intent on killing David. And in the 19th verse of 2 Samuel 5, we're told that David inquired of the Lord twice, and after receiving the affirmation of the Lord to go forth with his army, he vanquished the Philistines. And David, the scripture says, David's acclaims spread throughout all of Israel, and the Lord brought the fear of him upon all nations. So, brethren, just a very brief recitation of the faith and the works to attest their faith, the actions based on the faith of David and Jonathan. And, you know, it's remarkable to think, if you look at this picture, this is, of course, a picture that of the story told us in 2 Samuel, the 18th chapter. Jonathan, who was the son of the king, acknowledged David as the anointed, giving him his armaments and his garment. And what a statement of faith in humility was Jonathan's, because of their hearts knit together, united in faith, because of their profound love and belief in God. Jonathan and David were heroes of faith. They had a great love of one another for their mutual faith and love in God. And interestingly enough, Jonathan protected David from the wrath of Saul that's recorded in those two chapters cited here. You notice anything interesting about this picture? Look at the hair and the beards on these two individuals. What does that tell you? Jonathan looks a lot older than David. And you know, they may have been united in their love and faith of God, but they were not of the same generation. Jonathan was old enough to be David's father. In 1 Samuel, the third chapter, Jonathan is leading an army into battle. And according to the law, you had to be at least 20 years old to do this. And this was in the second year of the reign of Saul. 38 years later, Saul and Jonathan die. Jonathan in battle, Saul falling upon his own sword. And at that time, David is anointed king over Judah. And so at that time, Jonathan was 58, at least 58 years old. He may have been 60 plus years old. And David was 30 years old. So it is that Jonathan was at least 28 years older than David. And in summation, brethren, just in conclusion of our lesson, Jonathan and David were kindred spirits whose love for one another transcended that age difference and transcended the difficulties that they encountered, not the least of which was the conflict with Saul and Jonathan supporting his beloved friend David and not his father. There was no jealousy on Jonathan's part, for he knew that David was indeed the Lord's anointed. These two heroes of faith demonstrated their faith by their actions. They put their lives on the line, and in doing so, glorified God and have left for us a legacy and an example of faith, power of faith for all ages. And so our theme text, brethren, from Hebrews 11, 33 and 34, through faith, Jonathan and David, out of weakness, they were made strong and they waxed valiant in fight. Jonathan's words, there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few. And this statement, as powerful and as beautiful as it is, perhaps could be slightly amended in the case of David to say that there is no restraint to the Lord to save by large or by small. So these two brethren are for us an enduring and everlasting example of faith from which we can build upon, that it is the Lord's battle. And if we take those necessary steps of faith, even in the midst of such great odds of adversity, the Lord will take care of the rest. Faith in God is able to move mountains. May the Lord add his blessing.